If you're looking for a podcast that will lull you into a deep, gentle, restful sleep.
Well, that might actually happen.
Yeah, actually, this might be the one.
Could be just
We don't intend it for to be that way, but yeah, this might actually be that podcast.
We hope not, though.
Right. However, this is comedy.
Tragedy.
Marriage. Welcome to Comedy Tragedy Marriage, a podcast where a longtime married couple takes turns each episode selecting a movie, TV show, or documentary to watch. We watch it together, then we sit down and discuss it together and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it, and then share that discussion with you. I'm Stan the Movie Man. I review movies at stanthemovieman.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm just going to call it Twitter.
X-Twit, whatever.
Yeah. At Movie Man Stan. You can follow the podcast at CT Marriage. You can follow me also on other platforms like Spoutable, Blue Sky, and also Threads. You can follow me over there at Stan the Movie Man. If you have a question or something you would like to suggest we watch and discuss on the podcast, you can send us that information. Just send it to comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message by clicking the link in the description of this episode. Joining me, as always, is my other half.
Maud the Operatic Broad.
It was Maud's choice this week, and why don't you tell everybody what you selected?
What I chose was the documentary on PBS. It was an episode of American Masters called Marian Anderson, The Whole World in Her Hands. Now, for people who don't know who Marian Anderson is, after you listen to this podcast, you hopefully will want to know more, and you will search the interwebs and learn all about this musical and civil rights American icon, for lack of a better word. I think she is an iconic figure in American history, American civil rights history, and music history as well. Marian Anderson was born at the end of the 19th century. She was born in 1897. She passed away in 1993 at 96 years of age, a remarkable run. Now, she was classified as a contralto, which is the lowest female voice in classical voice classifications. However, the woman had a documented 3-octave range, and her high notes were just as powerful and pure and clear as her lower range. And she just was a remarkable voice and a remarkable presence in American music. She performed with famous orchestras in concert and recital venues throughout the United States and Europe for over 40 years, between like 1925 and 1965, according to the Wikipedia page on Marian Anderson. She was probably best known for her Lincoln Memorial performance in 1939 on Easter Sunday outdoors. And that whole thing came about, 1939, America is still hugely segregated. And the Daughters of the American Revolution refused to allow Marian Anderson to sing to an integrated audience at Constitution Hall in Washington. And so Marian Anderson, you know, as a woman of color, was refused the opportunity to sing in this venue just because of her race. This put her in a unique position in the spotlight of the international community, even for a classical music figure. And with the help of First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt and President Franklin Roosevelt, the concert venue was changed, and Marian Anderson performed a critically acclaimed and, you know, groundbreaking concert on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial on Easter Sunday, which was April 9th, 1939. The event was featured in a documentary, another documentary called Marian Anderson, The Lincoln Memorial Concert. Now, she sang in front of an integrated open-air crowd of more than 75,000 people there on site on the mall in Washington, and they say a radio audience in the millions. Another huge and highly unusual milestone in her career was on January 7th, 1955. She's nearly 58 years old at this point. She became the first African-American singer to debut at the Metropolitan Opera at age 58, which is remarkable. In addition to this, she also worked as a delegate to the United Nations Human Rights Committee, as a goodwill ambassador to the United States, the U.S. Department of State. She gave concerts all over the world in these capacities as well. She was active in the civil rights movement in the 1960s. She sang at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 1963. She was present at the Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech. In 1963, she was awarded the first Presidential Medal of Freedom. She was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in 1977, Kennedy Center Honors in 1978, the National Medal of Arts in 1986, and a Grammy Award Lifetime Achievement in 1991. She was very active in the church. Her parents were both Christians and active in the Baptist church. Her mother was briefly a student at the Virginia Seminary and College in Lynchburg and was a school teacher in Virginia. However, she was not able to teach in Philadelphia when they relocated there because the law was in effect for not black teachers, only black teachers and not white ones in Philadelphia. So she had to go to work as a domestic. Now, Marian was the oldest of three children. She had two younger sisters. They also became singers. Her sister Ethel married James DePriest, and their son, James Anderson DePriest, was a noted musical conductor as well. They were active in the Union Baptist Church. Her Aunt Mary was active in church and was a singer, and so Marian and Aunt Mary often did music together, sang together. Beginning as a young child at around age six, Aunt Mary arranged for Marian to sing at various local functions and events. And she often got paid, you know, 25 or 50 cents for singing a few songs. So she was making some bank even as a child. She was getting paid gigs when she was a little girl. Now, when she moved into her teen years, she started to make more money, as much as $4 or $5 for singing, which was a lot of money at that time. And for a person of color, hugely more so. When she was 10, Marian joined the People's Chorus of Philadelphia under the direction of singer Emma Azalea Hackley, and she was often a soloist there. There's a lot of information that's available on various sources online about Marian Anderson. She was remarkable, and she seemed, no matter how much she studied, both here in the States and abroad, she stuck with her roots as well. She was very well known for singing spirituals, and those were among most requested things for her to perform. People always wanted to hear her renditions of spirituals. She studied privately and was able to do that through the support of the black community there in Philadelphia. She studied voice first with Agnes Reifsnyder, and then with Giuseppe Boghetti, who was an Italian voice teacher. She met him through her high school principal. She auditioned for him by singing Deep River, and it is said that he was just immediately brought to tears with the quality and expression of her voice. He scheduled a recital of English, Russian, Italian, and German music at the Town Hall in New York City. Unfortunately, it got, you know, poor reviews and didn't have much of an audience. In 1923, she made two recordings, one of Deep River and the other My Way's Cloudy, for the RCA Victor Company. She was the first artist of color signed with RCA Victor. She was able to get a big break in 1925, singing for the New York Philharmonic in a music competition. She made a number of concert appearances throughout the U.S., but racial prejudice was very prevalent, so it really sort of stymied her as far as really making any momentum in her career. However, she did have her first performance at Carnegie Hall in 1928. She would have been 30 years old at the time, which is remarkable. She also was awarded a Rosenwald Fellowship of $1,500 to go overseas to study German Lieder, which is German art songs. She was able to do that in Berlin. While she was there, she did European tours. She went to Scandinavia, where she met Finnish pianist Kosti Vahanen, and he became her regular accompanist and vocal coach for a number of years, very long time. She also had the opportunity to meet famous Finnish composer John Sibelius through Vahanen after he had heard her in a concert in Helsinki. Sibelius was so moved by her performance that he invited them to his home, and it says here, asked his wife to bring champagne in place of the traditional coffee. He was very complimentary about the performance. He said that she had been able to penetrate the Nordic soul, and they struck up a friendship, and that developed into a professional partnership as well. And for a lot of years, Sibelius altered and composed songs for Marian Anderson. He also created a new arrangement of the song Solitude and dedicated it to Anderson in 1939. She made her European debut in a concert at Wigmore Hall in London in 1933 to a very enthusiastic audience. In the early years of the 1930s, she was able to tour Europe and not be hampered by the kind of racial prejudice that was common in America and that she experienced here. She toured throughout Europe, accompanied by Vahanen, through the mid-1930s, and went back to Scandinavia, where it's said that fans had Marian fever. She also performed in Russia and major cities of Eastern Europe and became a favorite of a lot of conductors and composers in major orchestras very quickly. She, during a 1935 tour in Salzburg, the famous conductor Arturo Toscanini heard her and told her that she had a voice that's heard, quote, once in every 100 years. Amazing career. However, here in the States, her many accomplishments still did not immunize her against the Jim Crow laws that were in effect in the 1930s. She gave about 70 recitals a year in the States, but she still was turned away by some American hotels and restaurants. In the middle of all this discrimination, Albert Einstein, who was a champion of racial justice, hosted Marian Anderson for years, the first time in 1937 when she was was turned away from a hotel while performing at Princeton University. And she stayed at Einstein's place for years when she was touring in his area. The woman is so remarkable in so many ways. And the documentary, which we streamed on PBS, however, the whole thing is available on YouTube as well. Now, it's about 2 hours, it's close to 2 hours in length. For me, this was deep geek heaven because as a musician, as a vocalist, I remember hearing about Marian Anderson in my little, you know, very truncated fifth grade history book at school, where each figure got like 3 pages in the book and they just kind of really skimmed over the high points of who they were and why they were important in American history. Marian Anderson had a voice that was, like I said, nearly 3 octaves in range, and all of it was gorgeous. This documentary on PBS was really special in that it included so many vintage photographs of Marian Anderson. There was a lot of music, audio recordings from her performances, both on the opera stage and in recital, and a lot of audio of her just speaking about her life. There was even a little snippet of a game show, and I don't remember which game show it was, but it's where a celebrity panel is blindfolded and they ask questions about, maybe it's 20 questions, I don't know.
To tell the truth.
To tell the truth. Okay. And they're asking her questions about, you know.
Or what's my line? Might have been what's my line.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. They didn't say, or if they did, I sneezed and missed it. But this panel of judges is trying to figure out who she is by asking her yes and no questions. And they're like, you know, are you a movie star? No. Are you this? Are you that? No. And one of them asked her, are you known for your beauty? And she smiled and giggled a little bit and said, no. And the game show host said, well, now I'm going to have to take issue to this question because while, you know, she's not a beauty queen or anything, she is beautiful. And she was. She had an unusually regal sort of bearing and dignity and presence about her. Lord, what I would have given to have been born early enough to have seen this woman on the stage. And I remarked to a friend of mine that just her phrasing and placement of tone were remarkable, and she must have had lungs down to her knees because this woman could hold out phrases forever long. And I'm sitting here listening to this old audio of her singing back in the day. And at one point, she held out this high, sustained, beautiful note for like 11 measures long. And I was just sitting here on the couch and I just went, damn, because it was so gorgeous and so impressive and so pure. Now, I have talked for nearly 20 minutes about Marian Anderson and this documentary and just some of the very few little reasons why she was awesome. This is not Stan's primary area of expertise necessarily, but he knows, you know, he can tell if you can carry a tune or not. He can tell if a voice is pleasing to his ear or not. So I'm very curious what this was like for you. How much of this information were you familiar with about Marian Anderson? How much did you know going into this? I mean, I'm pretty sure that you were aware of the concert on the Lincoln Memorial steps.
Yes, I was aware of that.
Yeah.
And you would have to be a fool not to know that a black woman in 1930s, 40s, 50s America was going to have a difficult time. But, you know, to hear her struggles of she couldn't get into music school because, to quote the young white woman that Marian Anderson
we don't
spoke
take
with,
colored here.
We don't
Sorry.
Take colored here. And that her mom, who was a teacher, couldn't get a job in Philadelphia because she was black. And, you know, even though she had the credentials, she just wasn't allowed. And, you know, Marian Anderson had toured all over Europe where the racial divisions were not, they didn't have them, at least until the Nazis came in.
Yeah, certainly not to the degree that the United States subjected her to.
Well, and a lot of American artists went to France so that they could be free and you know, do their art, do their performances,
yeah.
and be able to express themselves freely and without restriction.
The documentary did mention figures like Paul Robeson and Josephine Baker,
yes.
who had, you know, made careers in Europe and were able to perform and, you know, express themselves much more openly than here.
And, you know, she goes on this European tour and she can stay in the finest hotels. She doesn't, you know, have to go use the back entrance. She can eat in the dining room with everybody else. You know, she doesn't have to sit in the back car of the train. She can sit wherever she, you know, wherever she buys a ticket, that's where she can sit. You know, and then she comes back to America and she is smacked in the face with the same racism and Jim Crow laws that were here when she left. And yeah. it was just so sad to know that this woman who was so gifted and so talented, who had done nothing to these people who did not deserve to be treated the way she was, and still, simply because of the color of her skin, was a second or third class citizen for that one reason, because of ignorance. And now, as far as the beauty of her voice, she had a magnificent voice. I think of you as having a one in a million voice.
Aww.
But if you think about it, and no offense, there are 7.5 billion people on the planet. So if you have a one in a million voice, that means there's a lot of people who have a voice at least as good as yours.
Oh, please. Duh. Although my Sunday solo this past weekend went pretty okay.
Yes, it did.
That's an aside.
It went beautifully.
You're sweet.
But, you know, Marian Anderson had what I think could be a one in a billion voice. And a one in a billion gift as far as not just the quality of her voice, but also her range and her control and her breath. All of it was incredibly unique.
Just stunning.
Well, incredibly unique is redundant, but was unique. And all of it with not, you know, not that much training, really, especially at a young age when most gifted singers, you know, are snatched up and put in classes or private lessons.
or put on America's Got Talent.
Well, that's not training. You know, she was that she got her training in the church.
And by doing, I mean doing little paid gigs here and there, because
which was mostly in churches.
Yeah, because even at that young an age, her gift was recognized as being something special.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, she was born with it. She had a talent that was undeniable. You know, the when the DAR refused to let her perform in Constitution Hall because their terms of service or whatever it was called had a stipulation in it for white performers only. You know, Mrs. Roosevelt,
Eleanor
Roosevelt,
wasn't having it.
She resigned from
the DAR.
From the DAR. And, you know, Mrs. Roosevelt was a champion for Marian Anderson,
yeah,
to the point where FDR is said to have at one point commented, "She can sing from the top of the Washington Monument. I'm just tired of hearing about it."
Just do it.
Just
handle
it. But yeah, because since it's a national monument, FDR had to approve her performing there. So it was like, yeah, please do. But yeah, it was the documentary, aside from all the music, is, you know, if you have any question about, you know, the history of race in this country, please watch this documentary. It is a slap in the face, really. If you are someone that believes that, especially if you're someone that believes that racism is a thing of the past because we had a black president, it ain't.
We're recording this on Super Tuesday, even as we speak.
Well,
so,
yes.
Just as an aside, we think we've come a long way. And in some ways we have.
And in some ways we have, but there are those who want us to turn the hands of the clock back a century or two.
We've already gone back at least 50 years.
Yeah, sadly. And, you know, we can't allow that. So if you have any question what it was like back then, if you don't believe it was as bad as we're saying, then just watch how Marian Anderson was treated by restaurants and hotels when she was traveling around doing concerts, when she wasn't allowed to check into a hotel where her white piano player was allowed to stay, or eat at the same restaurant he was allowed to eat at. I mean, it's just so utterly ridiculous. Even later, when she and her husband were going to buy a house and some property.
But they wanted to buy land in Connecticut. And her husband, who actually was of mixed race, but he was pale enough that he was able to pass as white. His name was Orpheus, nickname King Fisher. And they wanted to buy property. And as long as it was just, you know, the face of Orpheus doing the dealing, it was fine. And then they found out that his wife was Marian Anderson. The deal was called off. They wanted to buy 50 acres of land and have a farm. They expanded the offer to buy 100 acres and were finally allowed to make the purchase. And it was so funny because there was film of her you know, out tending the chickens and sewing on her sewing machine. On one of her trips abroad, she had luggage that wasn't full of like furs and spangled gowns and a whole bunch of fancy stuff. She packed a sewing machine, her music, obviously, a sewing machine, and they said several items of cookware and some other like just really odd things.
Housewares.
Yeah.
Like home a coffee pot.
Home comfort, yeah, type of things.
Yeah.
To make her stays more comfortable in a sewing machine, I guess, maybe to make alterations or...
Or repairs.
Who knows? But not the kind of diva luggage one would expect. And from the interview audio that we hear of her, and there are some transcripts that are voiced by another younger actor, there seemed to be a humility about her, and she giggled a lot. In her audio, there was a lot of laughter, and there was a humility about her. I don't think that she necessarily... I think she just wanted to sing. I don't think that she necessarily set out by design to become this icon of the civil rights movement.
No, of course.
But she unwittingly played such a supporting role in the civil rights movement, and became an iconic figure through her gift of music, which just goes to show, you know, music geeks like me, I've had my own experience of having, because I sing, because I'm a music maker, people have made room at their table for me. And she experienced that in some surprising ways, and in a lot of ways, you know, because she was Black, people didn't make room, which is horrifying and very sad. The audience of 75,000, there was footage of that concert. There was a mixed multitude, as the Bible says, you know, an interracial, integrated audience out in the open air with their coats on Easter Sunday, united to listen to this miraculous, outstanding, adjective-defying artist make music. And it turned out to be something much more powerful than if they had allowed her, if the DAR had permitted her to sing at Constitution Hall. And she ended up reaching, you know, millions by radio, so many more people than if she had been permitted to do the DAR concert at Constitution Hall. So that was a remarkable turn of events and turned into something much more than the sum of its parts.
And I think, what, 40 years later, she did get to sing at Constitution Hall?
I think so. Eventually.
But, yeah, it's a remarkable career. She is a one in a billion human being who achieved an outstanding amount in her time on Earth, despite the fact that so much was held against her simply because of the color of her skin. It is a eye-opening and beautiful documentary and documentation of this artist's life. And we, I think you can probably tell, both highly recommend it. What do you give Marian Anderson? She's got the whole world in her hands.
Well, duh. 11 big fat opera singer ladies.
That's right. 5 stars for me as well.
So I have to ask you, I was nervous about this for you.
I don't see
because
why.
Because it was long, and it was deep geek music. And I was worried that you might sort of lose interest.
Well, had it been about somebody current, I might have. But because of the historical aspect to it, her place in the civil rights struggle, even if that's not what she was, you know,
trying to do,
you know, the history surrounding it, surrounding her, and like, you know, she knew Einstein.
Right.
he invited her to stay with him in Trenton, New Jersey when she got turned away at a hotel because she was black. I mean,
just the fact that she knew Toscanini. And he praised her voice as a once-in-a-century phenomenon. Remarkable. And with her birthday being in 1897, she was a contemporary of all of our grandparents.
Who probably didn't know who she was.
No. No.
You know, of course, obviously, way back before the kind of mass media that we are used to. I mean, they might have listened to her on the radio, maybe.
Possibly. My granny would have loved her singing Deep River. Oh, my God. I mean, the spirituals, that legacy alone, and those recordings are priceless and glorious. So, I'm glad that you liked it, and I'm glad that you liked it. I'm glad I picked something else that was okay for you. That always makes me happy.
Well, I'm glad that you're glad that I liked it.
Thanks, Boo.
It is American Masters, Marian Anderson, The Whole World in Her Hands. You can stream it on if you have the PBS app, and you got to give them a little money.
Worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Support public television and radio.
Yes, you can stream it on the PBS app, but apparently it's on YouTube as well.
Yeah,
so you can see it there.
You can take the chances there.
And according to the wiki page, there is the oh, by the way, the American Masters episode is a little over two years old. It was from 2022 in February.
Yeah.
And there is a documentary called Voice of Freedom that aired as an episode of American Experience on PBS.
Nice companion piece, I would think.
In 2021.
Okay.
So, and apparently it focuses more on the Constitution Hall controversy. So
I may have to be digging into that later.
Now that is assuming they didn't just rework it, and
like combine them or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't know.
That is also, I am assuming that is also available on the PBS streaming app. So. Might want to check that out as well. What else have you been watching, reading, listening to, whatever?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so last week I read two books. The first one is Kristen Hanna from like 2005, 2006. It's called Comfort and Joy. Now, a disclaimer here. My co-worker and partner in crime at the library read The Four Winds by Kristen Hanna and said that it was very heavy and very dark and very sad, and that she would never read Kristen Hanna again because it was just such a stressful read for her. I have not read The Four Winds yet, but I hope to add that to my list. I picked up Comfort and Joy by Kristen Hanna just from some descriptions that I read online. It is a glorious little book, and you can easily finish it in one sitting. I did. It surrounds a character named Joy, and it hits all the elements of like family drama, betrayal, There's near-death experience, there's some supernatural, mystical, magical, there's romance, there's a relationship between a mother figure and a child figure, and how their relationship blossoms and how they nourish one another's spirits. It is just a sweet, sweet book, and I have begged my coworker to please give Kristen Hannah another try, because this book is everything that apparently The Four Winds for her was not. So that was the first book I finished last week. Secondly, from 2019, debut novel called The Silent Patient. The author is Alex Michaelides. This is a murder mystery, psychological suspense, and several plot lines intertwined so beautifully about a woman who is an artist, and she is accused of her husband's murder, and it looks, you know, all the circumstantial evidence, you know, points to her that she did it. She is committed to a psychiatric hospital and refuses to speak, and she does not speak for like ages, and this one therapist decides he really, really wants to be the one to try to treat her, to try to bring her out of her silence and find out what the heck really happened. There is such a 180 degree plot twist toward the end of this thing. I did not see it coming. It was glorious. And Alex Michaelides has written several books since then. The Fury, The Maidens, several versions of The Maidens. Anyway, The Fury comes out this year. For a debut novel, I could not fathom something such glorious literary fiction as this. So I'm gonna be diving more into Alex Michaelides. It was a wonderful book, The Silent Patient from 2019, his debut novel. And I'm watching the same stuff that I've been watching, and anything else that I'm watching with you. So,
okay,
there we go.
Well,
what's Stan been up to?
Well, you at least were awake for part of this. But then I heard you start snoring. So, The Fire That Took Her.
Oh, I remember nothing.
Okay. It's available to stream on Paramount Plus. It is a documentary film, about a woman named Judy Malinowski, who is perhaps one of the first people who has ever testified against the person who is accused of killing her, in that person's murder trial. Judy Malinowski was doused in gasoline and set on fire by her abusive boyfriend. She survived wounds that usually are fatal. She lived for several months.
Ugh.
After her wound, after she was burned. She was in intensive care pretty much the entire time, except for the last few weeks.
Dear Lord.
And she was constantly on enormous amounts of painkillers because she had, at one time, been an opioid abuser.
Ugh.
And part of the abusive nature of her boyfriend was that he got her back on heroin. He didn't use, but it was a way he could control her.
That is reprehensible.
Now, and it just, you will, this documentary will make you very angry on numerous levels, at the boyfriend, at the system, at lots of people. But I don't know. It depends on what you can tolerate. If you're a survivor of abuse, you may not want to watch this.
I can imagine where it might be triggering for some people.
Yes. So if you've, and if you will need a strong stomach, because they show Judy not long after, while she's in the hospital, so she's been treated, but they show her, you know, when they're changing her bandages, and of course that is agonizing for a burn victim, especially since she was burned over 90% of her body, and you know, it is a horrific scene.
Lord,
there is video of the actual crime. Is very grainy, from a bank ATM that constantly filmed. It didn't just film when somebody stuck a card in. It was constantly rolling, and you see it happen. Although it's sort of blurry, but you see the crime happen. And even without a huge amount of detail, it's awful. If you can deal with that, then all the stuff this family went through, it is an eye-opening and frustrating and important, I think, documentary for anyone who has a loved one in a situation that you suspect might be abusive. Get them out fast. Even if they don't want to get them out, because it can go real bad, real
Question.
Fast. It's on Paramount Plus, yes.
Are you sorry that you watched it? I mean, because
no.
It sounds like it really has affected you in a troubling kind of way.
No, it's just there's no winners in this documentary. I mean, it has a somewhat satisfying conclusion.
Did he go to jail?
Well, spoiler alert, the boyfriend goes to jail. But, you know, there's what had to be done to get him in jail is just, it's terrible.
Hellacious.
It's, there's so much awful. I mean, he's a repugnant human being, and he used and abused the system as much as he could. You know, and before that, he used and abused Judy. So it's just awful. So The Fire That Took Her on Paramount Plus.
Ugh.
It's pretty rough. All right. Something a little lighter. I went to see Dune Part 2. Simply because of time, the way timing worked out, I went to the 4DX showing. Now, maybe around in other parts of the country, because it's called something different. This is where your seat moves. And they spray water in your face, a very light mist. Air blows, like if something whizzes past the character's head, you get a little puff of air that blows past your ear. And there's fog and mist and all kinds of stuff.
So it's a multi-sensory kind of deal.
Hence the 4DX. And the only thing it was missing was if it was in 3D. The movie's not in 3D. But
with all the stuff that you just described, if it had been in 3D too, you might have vomited. I mean, it sounds like a lot. Plus, the movie's long.
Yes. The Dune Part 2 is 2 hours and 46 minutes long. I did not stay through the credits because I knew there wouldn't be any post-credit or mid-credit or anything like that.
No Easter eggs.
No. Now, my problem with Dune Part 1 was it was dull. It was all set up for what was to come in Dune Part 2, which they weren't 100% sure they were going to make if Dune Part 1 didn't do well. Fortunately, it did well enough for them to make Dune Part 2. But it takes them so long to get to the good stuff in Dune Part 2. It feels just so dragged out and long and boring that I just was like, we really could have cut a half hour out of this and moved it along. Now, maybe for the art of the film, the artistry of the film, that would have ruined it. Look, I'm as pedestrian as they come, so I would rather a movie that moves along faster and doesn't test my patience there's some great work of art film that is 8 hours of a static shot of the Empire State Building and the sun and the shadows of the city of New York in real time shifting.
What?
I don't want to watch that. I'm good. It was made back in the 60s or 70s, I think.
Yeah, I don't get it.
So, give me more sandworms. Give me more, giant scale battles. When they blow stuff up, that was great. The effects look fantastic. But, whew, boy, is that a long movie to sit through.
Okay.
Also, the 4DX, at least where I was, at the Regal Theater where I was watching it, there is one scene where a ship crashes where I thought I was going to be thrown out of my seat.
Oh my gosh. That's a lot.
That is a whole lot, especially a fat boy like me.
Oh, stop.
I really did think I was going to get slung out of the seat. It wasn't the most pleasant experience. I will avoid the 4DXs from now on because it doesn't, for me, add anything. If they would turn that down about 25% so that I wasn't afraid I was going to wind up on the floor, stuck to the spilled cola and bubble gum or whatever candies down there, that might be... It might be a little more enjoyable, but I mean, even the little commercial they run for the 4DX prior to the movie, it shakes you. About shook me out of the seat. So that's the second 4DX movie I've seen.
And your insides are, your insides will live to tell the tale.
Well, yes, but
I don't want my gizzard shook up.
Well, I don't either. I've ridden motion rides like the Star Trek Experience in Las Vegas.
God, I missed that.
That were less violent than the 4DX. So, they just need to turn the seat thing down, the hydraulics on the seat down about 25%, it would be far more enjoyable, at least for me. All right. So that's Dune Part 2. It's long and it's kind of dull.
Okay.
In my opinion. Now, finally, we wrap up with a streaming service called Canopy, which you can access because you have a library card.
It's a library thing.
And they have a lot of movies and a lot of documentaries on there. And one documentary that I watched is called Behind the Burlicue, which is a history of burlesque in America, going way back to the early 20th century. And it's got a lot of stills and interviews with very old, many of them now dead,
burlesque performers,
the comedians, as well as the dancers, and some old film shot in the theaters. And apparently there were some movies shot of burlesque performances. And it's fascinating to watch them talk about their time there. Some of them said it was the best time of their lives, and others talk about how some of the performers were incredibly unhappy and self-medicated with alcohol and morphine and whatever else. And a lot of them got married 4 and 5 and 6 times. And,
oof.
And, gave up children to adoption and, you know, so on and so forth. So you have this real huge split between some of them who think it was the greatest time ever and others who, you know, most of whom are dead, who just hated every second of it.
They were just doing it to survive.
And killed themselves or lived in a way that killed them. So, but it is a fascinating documentary. It's called Behind the Burlicue. And you can watch it for free on Canopy. All you need is a library card.
And your account in good standing.
And, yes. And you can, and it's free. You don't have to pay anything for it. At least I assume pretty much every place you don't have to pay for a library card. I'm guessing.
I would assume.
I'm guessing. I don't know about every place. Anything else from you?
No, next week is your turn.
Yes, it is. Haven't a clue.
Okay.
So, let's all be surprised when you join us next week for the next edition of Comedy, Tragedy, Marriage. We appreciate you listening to this episode. Please subscribe, rate, and review on the podcast platform of your choice. If you do it on Spotify, though, it helps us out a whole lot. If you have any questions for us, or if you have a suggestion for something you want us to watch, either a movie, TV show, or documentary, just tell us the name of it and why you think we should watch it and send that information to us. Send it to comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also send it to us in a voice message. Just click the link in the description of this episode. I'm Stan the Movie Man. That's Maud the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you too.
And until next time,
later.